Hi, everybody. This is Mel.
And this is Jill.
And this is Mel and Jill Geek Out. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Mel.
How's it going?
Not too bad.
Well, we have some exciting Empyrean series news.
We do.
Rebecca Yarros came out and announced the release date and name of book 3.
Yay!
So it comes out January 25th, 2025. I'm pretty sure she did that so everyone will shut up about book 3 being rushed.
God, I hope so.
And then it is going to be called Onyx Storm. And there are already so many theories about what the hell that means.
Yeah. What's your top one?
I think it is referring to both Zayden and Violet in some manner, because Zayden's eyes are consistently referred to as being the color of onyx with gold flecks. Mm-hmm. So I think he is the onyx, and obviously Violet is the storm. And the tagline is, they were enemies, then lovers, and now she has to save his soul.
Yeah.
Which, if when you've read to the end of Iron Flame, you understand what that means.
I guess we'll have to talk about this again when we get to the end of the book.
We will have to have a little theory time.
Yes.
I don't have a strong one of what I think is relating to this title. I was very confident and was kind of right about the story of Iron Flame and where that comes from, which we're actually going to talk about in this section. So I'm not going to spoil where I picked up on what Iron Flame was going to mean.
No spoiler jingle right now.
But yeah, nice, exciting news. So they have a deluxe edition and a regular edition out for pre-order. I have already pre-ordered deluxe edition because it's who I am as a person.
What's the difference?
Sprayed edges.
Oh. I don't know if I'll pre-order this one. We'll see.
I think you'll pre-order maybe like the audiobook or the Kindle. I don't think you're going to do physical copy unless you go to another like launch party.
Yeah, I would do it for a launch party. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Yeah, you had a good time at the one for Iron Flame.
It was so much fun playing Cards Against Humanity with a bunch of random strangers. I'm not joking. I know that sounds like actual sarcasm, but I'm dead serious. It was so much fun.
No. Maybe this makes me like super millennial, but I love Cards Against Humanity. I think it is like the perfect adult card game.
Me too. I think it is so much fun.
So fun. So funny. Do we want to dive right in?
Let's do it.
To the next section. So we are going to be starting part 2 of Iron Flame, and we are going to be picking up on chapter 37. And I'm going to start this little section out as I want to do, and that is reading the snippet at the beginning of the chapter. I'm going to warn you, there's quite a few tabs.
I believe
you. This is
why
we're only doing a few chapters in this section.
We'll see how far we actually get. You say that, and then
These are pretty dense chapters.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know how far we'll get.
So, the opening snippet for chapter 37 is half palace, half barracks, but entirely a fortress. Ryerson House has never been breached by army. It survived countless sieges and 3 full-out assaults before falling under the flame of the very dragons it existed to serve. On Tyr's History, A Complete Accounting, 3rd Edition, by Captain Fitzgibbons. Now, we already know that this is inaccurate because we have been to Ryerson House,
mm-hmm.
and it is just fine.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that, you know, obviously this little snippet is a little bit wrong because it doesn't have history recorded super accurately. But it is a Ryerson House has never fallen.
Aren't they referring to like when his dad bent the knee?
No. So they're referring to like actual physical attacks at Ryerson House.
Okay.
Like it has never been overtaken by force.
Okay.
They think it's interesting. It's a Helm's Deep kind of moment, in my opinion.
I don't remember Helm's Deep.
So Helm's Deep is in Lord of the Rings in Two Towers. Mm-hmm. It's the place that the Rohirrim, the horse people, go to when they kick out Saruman and Wormtongue.
Okay.
And they retreat there and then the orcs attack. And there's like that really
long fight. Is this the big white castle?
No, it's the one in the movie before that.
Girl,
it's the super dark one and it's raining. And it's bad.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Well, to the people out there who are ring ears like me, you are also slightly disappointed in Jill not remembering the incredibly important Battle of Helm's Deep.
I remember the name.
It's incredibly important. So chapter 37 opens with Violet having another dream about the sage. It's not great. So this seems to be coming a little bit of a recurring dream because she says, I'm trapped in this fucking nightmare again. So this is probably not the second time this has occurred. And she comments that she's made it further this time. And the sage, there's some interesting things that happen. So I'm going to read you this one line. It says, yet you sleep beyond them. A grotesque smile tilts his cracked mouth, and the longest night has yet to pass. So the sage is talking about how she is sleeping beyond the words because there are no words in Aurasia. I have a feeling the longest night is something important that we're probably going to either learn about maybe in this book or maybe in the next one. What is the longest night? Any theories?
No. That wasn't convincing. Not so much about them. The sage thing. The long night. No, I didn't really pay attention to that part.
Yes, I maybe paid too much attention to literally everything.
I mean, you got lots of tabs there.
I sure do.
I was more focused on like her having the dream with the sage. I don't think it's a dream. I think it gives me Harry Potter and Voldemort vibes. Like it's a real time thing. It's not a dream. And obviously something's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think these are just straight up dreams. No. I feel like there's something maybe a little paranormal happening in these. And I have a little bit of a theory.
Let's hear it. Do we need the spoiler jingle?
Yes, because I want to get claim for this if I am correct.
Okay. We see how well that ended for us last time. Me, really, but this time it's your turn.
So insert spoiler jingle. Theory jingle, whatever it is. I agree with you on this like Voldemort, Harry Potter type thing. What if the sage is Naolin?
Go ahead.
And the connection is Tarn.
I could totally buy that. I kind of thought that as well. Go ahead.
And what if the only way to break the connection is for Tarn to die and he dies in book 3?
Ooh, I didn't go that far. Maybe. Maybe. I didn't think about it from that perspective, but that makes sense. But I did think that the sage was Nalen.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
I'm pretty confident the sage is Nalen.
Yeah. That's the only thing that makes sense to me, because they haven't said he's dead. It just said that they don't talk about him. I mean, I think some people are under the impression that he is dead, but I don't think that he is.
We've already learned no body, no dead.
Exactly.
In this book.
Exactly.
In this series, if you don't see the body, there's no guarantee that they're dead.
Yeah. So we'll see. Yes, we'll see.
So she wakes up and a lot has transpired in 24 hours. She has been rescued from the brig of torture in Basgaiath. Mm-hmm. They have convinced 100 riders and 200 dragons to ditch Basgaiath for Aresha. She has flown all the way here after being tortured for a week. And Brennan has also come in and mended her. And she wakes up in Zayden's room, in his bed, next to him. And then we get the thing that you and I complain about in books all the time. They proceed to just have a lot of sex.
Yeah. It's like...
And I'm just like, you know what? I don't care if I had just been mended. I have some emotional trauma that I need to work through from being tortured for a week.
Yeah.
And leaving behind literally my entire life. I might not be in the mood.
I'm with you. This, like, let's have sex at the most, like, ridiculous times that... or said it. I don't know. Like, my headspace just wouldn't be there. It just wouldn't be there.
No. And Zayden is like, not like saying no, but he's like initially like a little bit apprehensive, because he's like, you were literally like pretty broken.
Maybe not a good idea.
But she was really insistent. So he just went with it very willingly. There's consent, but
still,
I feel like this is the thing that is so jarring, because it's so dislike reality.
Yes, but why did? But if that's the case, maybe
we're the weird ones.
I was gonna say maybe we're the weird ones. Maybe it's the insecure person in me, but I'm genuinely like, this isn't a time that I would be thinking about having sex.
No.
But it seems to happen so often in media. It's like, well, maybe I'm the weird one. I don't know. Internet.
So tell us if we are the weird ones.
Are we the weird ones?
So once they finish doing the nasty,
can I add something totally inappropriate?
Please.
I can't remember if it's this scene, but now, like, anytime anybody that I read about who has lightning abilities and they have sex, all I can think about is how these two hook up and then there's literal fucking lightning destroying shit. So now I picture it in every other book.
Forest fires getting started.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like,
there's no secret when the two of them are going at it.
It's so awkward. Could you imagine knowing every time your best friend and her dude have sex? No, thank you.
No.
I'm glad you're enjoying yourself. I don't need to know.
They do talk about in this particular time, Zayden's shadow magic does stifle some of the lightning going on.
Thank God.
But I think that's mostly because he didn't want her to burn his house down, not because he cared about anything else.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So once they, you know, clean themselves up, they go downstairs and essentially immediately get hauled into the assembly room. All the cadets are there. They're just kind of like chilling.
Yeah, they're like,
we're here.
Cool. Now what?
Now what? So they go into the assembly room, and needless to say, the assembly isn't in love with the predicament they are now in.
No.
Because in a single night, they have gained all of these dragons they now have to feed, a bunch of cadets they have to feed and house. They lost their access to weaponry that will kill the Venon, a luminary to do it, and having anybody at all be able to be protected behind wards, because now they're all like enemies of the state.
Yeah.
They're not thrilled.
No.
I wouldn't real be mad. Either.
Because, like, let's be honest. This is such a case of actual adults doing things and making plans, and then a bunch of fucking idiot early 20-somethings, late teens decide they know best and come in and wrecking shop. Absolutely wrecking shop. Granted, I'm not saying that, like, she shouldn't be involved. Not at all. Like, she should. Because she's got the talents that they need. But, like, Jesus Christ. Like, talk about a bull in the china shop.
Yeah, it wasn't great. So they're in there and she's getting yelled at. And they have, like, Dane in for questioning. And they're like, well, his dragon vouching for him should be enough. But they're like, nah, bitches. He's a fucking Atos. Like, we don't trust this motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
And Zayden throws a little power around, and then Violet thinks this to herself. Gravity shifts as I stare at the thin silver line that pure, precise edges. So she's talking about the scar on his chest that he has has acquired in Iron Flame. And she realizes that when they first came to Aracia after the Battle of Athbin, he took responsibility for Violet the same way he took responsibility for all of the marked kids.
Why is this done? Like, why is this?
She did not put two and two together until literally right now.
But it's so obvious.
I know that. You know that. Violet took a while. She also finally deduces what you and I deduced like chapter two, which is there's a bunch of chairs around a table, and one of the chairs is super fancy and has like a dragon carved on it and has like shiny black wood, and she's like, holy shit, I knew this was his house, of course, but never really registered. This is all Zayden's. No noble has claimed the duchy of Aracia. They all think the land is ruined, or worse, cursed. It's all his. She just now realized he's like the fucking Duke of Aracia.
Why is these things is what these scenarios, these things that pop up like this, it's what
this
makes
all should have been figured out in part one.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and it's like it goes into the like this book needed to bake longer thing that we've talked about repeatedly. So I won't go into it again. But, you know, again, it could have been better served earlier.
100%. And then we learned that some of the professors also came along. So Emeterio, the combat guy, and Deborah, who we all know and love.
Yes.
Are among some of the professors that came. So the assembly and everyone decide to split the quadrant, like split the writers back up into wings and restart classes.
I mean, what choice do they have?
Literally none. None of these writers are ready to go do literally anything.
Yeah. It's like, great, you're all here. You know, fuck all. Like, let's finish.
In the conversation, Violet brings up that the reason this chain of events occurred is because she and Zayden and the crew stole the journal. And they have Warwick's journal there in Erasia. Mm-hmm. And so she can read it and go from there. But apparently it's in some dead ass language that Brennan openly admits having not learned.
Of course it is. But
Violet does. So they're like, well, we can translate this journal and hopefully get the information we need to be able to raise the wards in Erasia. So they're talking about that. And then Taryn interrupts. Because Andarna's finally awake.
Yay!
Yay! And so that brings us to chapter 38. And so they head up to the valley with the hatchling grounds there above Erasia. And we see Andarna for the first time in a long time. So we learn that she has a scorpion tail. Go Andarna for picking a cool tail. And this is how she's originally described. She's laying in the grass and she looks content with her scorpion tail and she looks kind of green. No, her scales are still black. It must be an adolescent thing that they're so shiny. She reflects some of the color around her.
Okay. Maybe it was just obvious to me. I don't know about you, but the like such attention to detail about the way Andarna looked was glaringly obvious from the fucking jump.
Oh, it's pretty clear. Like, yeah. You have to be not paying that much attention to have missed some of this stuff.
But when like people were originally coming out. Okay. Spoiler alert. Spoiler jingle.
Spoiler jingle.
When people were coming back saying, oh, I didn't know that. I'd like, of course she. What does she end up being? Like, she can change how she looks, yeah, correct?
Yeah, she's like a chameleon.
Yeah. I was like, no shit, Sherlock. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, it's been every time they talked about her scales, they were different. Every fucking time. They were a
different color.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, clearly someone can change her scale colors. Like,
there's also Andarna herself saying she can hide, she can keep out of sight.
Yes.
Like, Andarna knows exactly what the fuck she is.
Nobody's listening to her. And in fact, I think she says that later that, like, mm-hmm. I did tell you, but nobody mm-hmm. was fucking paying attention.
Yeah.
It's annoying. It's also annoying that Violet doesn't pick up on this sooner.
Yeah, she's not. For somebody who like reads a lot of books, she's not very observant.
No. And you should, like, I feel like that's something that you would be, like, you're picking up on minute details when you read things. And she memorizes this shit. You know what I mean? And I don't know. It bothered me that she did not see this earlier.
I don't disagree with you. It was, I feel like I picked up on so much stuff so fast.
Yes.
In comparison to the characters in the fucking book. Like, I shouldn't be able to, like, get there faster than the characters 90% of the time.
I agree with you. As somebody who loves to figure shit out in the book, like, it used to irritate the piss out of me sometimes with Throne of Glass, because there are things that happen off page that you don't know about. until it comes out. And then you're like, God damn it. Had I known that, I would have known X, Y, and Z. But yeah. I kind of loved it that stuff. But it's like, I can read this so early. It's annoying that the other ones aren't picking it up. That the characters aren't picking it up. It's like, Jesus, come on.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating. So when Indarna wakes up, she is in full teenager mode.
This living with a teenager, this was funny.
She's a little sassy, a little spicy, likes to give Taryn shit.
Oh my God. It's definitely like speaking to a teenager who has not had enough sleep. Just like everything is irritating. Everything's annoying and you're stupid.
Yeah. And she's hungry. So yes. It just makes it that much worse.
Exactly.
So they're talking. And Darna tries to extend her wings, but one of her wings will not extend all of the way. And then Violet is given all of this guilt. And then Indarna, like, kind of truthfully, she's like, I'm not broken. Are you broken? Like,
I thought that was such a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still love Indarna, even though she's not a little bebe anymore. So
they have to grow Indarna, up.
Yeah, and Darna and Sigail go off to hunt some sheep that she doesn't have to fly to catch. And Taryn gives us a little explanation. That was very difficult to say.
Say it three times fast.
No, thank you. So the issues with her wing kind of come from the fact that she had to expend a lot of energy during the Battle of Athmin. And then that was combined with them not being able to get her into the dreamless sleep for a few days afterwards. If she had been able to immediately fall asleep, she probably would have been okay. But because they had to fly back to Basgaeth, not great. Mm-hmm. So Taryn tells Violet that in time, Indarna will learn to fly. The other muscles will develop, like the muscles that are there will develop to compensate so that she can fly. But she more than likely will not bear a rider. And I don't agree with this assessment. I'm pretty confident by the end of book 5. Indarna is going to bear Violet.
I'm pretty sure she will, too. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure she will, too.
So, but it sets that little seed of doubt.
I do like how Indarna kind of matches Violet a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think gives way more, like, additional, like, evidence to what you suspect that happens later in the book as well.
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just a matter of time. So they leave them all to be and they go, you know, we fast forward a little bit and they're in classes. And they've essentially split them back into the wings they originally were. And in history class, everybody's on a little bit of a learning curve because history is not what any of them have been taught their whole lives or a significant portion of their lives. And they are now learning more about what really happened during the Tirish Rebellion. And, you know, a little learning curve for everyone. And then we go into battle brief, which is now Brennan and Professor Devra. And one thing I just want to point out is that we get a translation for Brennan's new last name. And it means, oh my gosh, hang on. I totally had it marked and then I forgot. Oh no. Oh, it means resurrection. In Tirish. Thank you for having the most obvious last name in the entire world, Brennan. And Violet has now at this point told her friends who Brennan really is, but no one else knows.
I mean, as so, she should.
Yeah, at this point, there's no reason to lie to them. So during battle brief, they're talking about how why Melgren hasn't attempted to come get the cadets. And the explanation is sort of probably doesn't want to draw that much attention. And he doesn't really have the writers he needs to like go force them to come back. So we're just going to turn a blind eye for now.
Yeah.
So when Brennan comes in, he talks about how, you know, they've put them back into these wings and they, the entire fourth wing or the entire flame section of fourth wing came along. All the whole section is complete from Baskaya. Similar to Iron Squad from book one. When they have the most cadets who survive through.
Oh, threshing. Oh, okay. I was like, wait, what? Okay. Hence, I see what you're saying.
Iron Flame.
Yes. I got you.
Round of applause to Melissa for connecting that before the book started. I was like, ah, it's the title of the book. Don't judge me.
No, I'm proud of you. I'm excited for you. You get excited when I'm when I get right about shit. So I'm excited for you.
Thank you. I was very excited. Wait until we talk about House of Flame and Shadow and many, many, many moons. Because I was right about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. Very proud of myself. Anyways. So somehow though, Melgren has kept Zayden's little stunt of dropping wyvern bodies over the border, out of the public knowledge, which is unfortunate because it wouldn't have been nice for this to just all go out in the public and the secrecy to be over, but no. We have to continue to deal with the general population doesn't fucking know.
Yeah.
But they are trying to get letters out to all of the cadets' families to try to get them to like either move away from the border or come to Eurasia. So during battle, they're talking about a battle and asking questions about Samara, where an attack from a drift happened. And in the middle of this conversation, Taryn pops in and, Taryn pops in and he's like, Tiny is here. Tiny is Mira's dragon.
Uh-oh.
So they don't know if they're there to attack them. They don't know if they are there to join them. They have no idea why they are here. So Violet rushes outside into the courtyard right at the same time that Tiny and two other dragons with their riders land in the courtyard. And then Taryn is like instantaneously there and hyper aggressive. He like blows out all this fire and then he like grabs Tiny by the neck. It's like real dramatic.
Uh-oh.
Real dramatic. Mira drops down and she's like, tell Taryn to knock it off. We are here in peace. So then we get a little backstory. Okay. What the fuck has been happening in the past couple of days in Nevair? And it is a bunch of riders have defected after seeing the wyvern and learning the truth. In Samara, Violet's mom went and told her, like told all of the people at Samar the truth and gave them an hour to decide. and a bunch of them left, and they met up with other people who were leaving, and together they all flew to Erasia, and then Zayden escorted them in. So I just want to point out that Mom is the one who told the truth.
She didn't leave.
A long time. She probably has a reason to not leave.
Mm-hmm.
That we have yet to learn. So they're talking about all of this stuff, and the explanation of why leadership let this happen from Mira is, leadership decided letting us go was a safer choice than letting us stay and talk to the others into leaving, or worse, leaking information. And besides, it wasn't really our choice, was it? And she looked to Tiny.
The dragons were like, yeah, no, you're coming with me.
Yeah, we're deucing out of here. I think that's interesting.
I missed that bit.
Because Violet and Brennan left on their own accord. They decided to leave and the dragon concurred. That is not the case for Mira. Mira is there because Tiny wanted to be there. And P.S. Tiny is spelled T-E-I-N-E. And the only reason why I know how to say that correctly is because audiobook. I find this really interesting, and I feel like it plays into my theory from the end of Fourth Wing that eventually I think Mira might turn evil.
It would make sense.
It would.
It would make sense.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting. And then they're having these conversations, and then Mira looks over her Violet's shoulder and freezes. Because Brennan is there.
Yeah.
And she is shocked for obvious reasons because she thought he was dead. And she then proceeds to punch him in the face.
kind of deserves it.
Yes. I think he definitely deserved it. And the only reason that Violet didn't punch him in the face is because she had just woken up from being like almost dead. Apparently, every time Violet goes to see her brother, she's almost dead.
Yeah.
So that brings us to chapter 39. We have a lot to talk about in this chapter.
Okay.
And I'm going to start with the snippet at the beginning because I definitely just want to track the evolution. So it says, the blood of life of the six and the one combined and set the stone ablaze in an iron rain. And this is the Journal of Warwick of Luceris, translated by Cadet Violet Sorengale. This is not the first time we're going to see this passage.
No.
I knew something from this first translation, though, that it takes Violet the rest of this fucking book to put together.
I'm with you. I'm with you. You want to save it or do you want to tell him now?
Oh, no, it gets, I think once we get the correct translation, because P.S., this translation is not correct. It just continues to hit harder and harder and harder.
Your face, you look so pissed right now.
I was so mad that this is like, okay, did you watch Power Rangers growing up?
I did, but I don't remember a fucking thing.
Okay, I'm gonna give you general plot point.
Okay.
Not specific. Every episode essentially had the same arc.
Okay.
Power Rangers were doing a thing. Random bad guys show up. Power Rangers initially kick their asses. But then Power Rangers have to go up against the big bad who controls the little minions, and they lose so bad. So bad they fail. But then at the end of the episode, they have to come together in their like giant Power Ranger outfit. I don't remember what it's called. And then they win the day. So it is incredibly predictable that the first time a really important thing is supposed to happen, it's not going to fucking work.
Yeah.
So the fact that we are literally three chapters into the second part and we think we have everything fucking figured out, really fucking annoying to me, because I'm like, there is absolutely no way this thing that has been a major plot point in this entire book is figured out in chapter 39.
You know what? I'm with you. There are so many times where I'm like, okay, well, I still have a good chunk of the book left, so whatever this like big bad that I'm thinking is gonna happen can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's too much left in the book.
Correct. Hence the SJM last 100 pages anxiety that you get.
Oh, good God, yeah.
Everyone's too happy. This isn't going to last.
Buckle up, baby.
Buckle up. This is not that.
No, not even a little bit.
So the Sorengale siblings head inside into the converted office that is now the history classroom and proceed to just like yell at each other. Because the only person who knows why Mira is mad is Violet. Because no one else realizes that this is Brennan's other sister.
Yeah.
And she has like some personal beef here.
This was such a sibling interaction, though.
It was, though. It was like Violet's like trying to like play peacekeeper and like just get some fucking ice for Brennan's nose, because P.S. Mira breaks Brennan's nose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Deservedly. But we learned some important information during this sibling squabble. And that is, Brennan admits, he's like, do you know how hard it is to mend myself? You, no problem. Doing it for myself, a giant pain in the ass. So that means Brennan is not, can he heal himself? Sure. Is it a convenient thing to do? No. Definite plot point in the future.
Absolutely. But also, Mira's definitely being like, sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, she don't give a fuck.
Don't care.
Deal with it. So then we get an interesting couple of lines from Brennan about their parents. And this is why I'm a big believer that Papa Sorengale is the father to all three of these children.
Okay.
About his father, he says, our father would understand what I've been doing. Brennan's voice turns nasal as he moves the blood down. And then he says, as for our mother, I hope my death haunts her every damned day. She was so willing to sacrifice my life for a lie.
I don't want to say I told you so, but like, I kind of wanna.
So I don't see, I'm not trying to be a Lilith apologist by any means,
but I feel
like there's more to this story.
I'm sure there is. Oh,
angry.
Yeah.
Kid reaction. And I just figured it out.
What?
I just put it together.
Let's hear it.
Lilith is Snape.
Okay. Deal.
Snape
Let's
is
talk
terrible.
About this. Because Snape, like, dude, like, I'm sorry. Dumbledore and Snape, I don't. Like, I really don't like them. And I don't like that they have been romanticized into this thing just because Harry Potter. Like, the man named his child after his abusers, his literal abusers. And it's like, ridiculous. So, like, I'm sorry. Just because you did something for the greater good doesn't mean that that, like, makes this all okay.
I'm not saying it makes it all okay. I'm just saying there's more to this story than what we've been presented. And that
fair.
She's interesting to me right now because I want to know those details. And I'm not casting her in good or evil until I know that. And I know that that's probably controversial, but like, to me, she's one of the most compelling characters in this entire story because she has so many secrets.
I hear what you're saying. I always disliked Snape. I still dislike Snape. I understand what you're saying. She's a great character, but I also hate her. Fair. Honestly, probably because I have like my own interpersonal issues and she just like embodies some of them. And I'm like, oh, I hate you so much. But I don't know. It's again, that thing where I feel like people and characters should be better than they are.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she's going to live up to your standards.
No, and it's going to piss me off.
I do think she's going to be interesting along the way.
I'll give you that. It's interesting. It's interesting. But I feel like maybe it's because I get this sense that you want her to have like a redemption. Or no. Is it more that you just want to know the reasons behind her choices?
I just want to know the reasons.
Okay, that's fair. Because I don't like the redemption bit. I totally want to know why she did what she did. But I don't like how... I hated how Snape and Dumbledore kind of got this redemption at the end. You know what I mean? It's like, no.
Snape's redemption of being in love with Harry's mom was gross. I'm like, sorry. That was not a redemption.
It wasn't.
It was a dumb reason.
It really wasn't. And then like, but at the same time, it's like you didn't even really honor what you asked. You know, it's like if you really, truly loved this woman, why are you torturing her son? Do you think that she'd be happy with this?
Exactly. And it's like it would be one thing where like his friendship with Lily is what led him to seeing the other side.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, her death was his catalyst to then, you know, start working with Dumbledore and being a spy on the inside. But like him just like loving her to me was like really flat because it was unrequited. And I'm like, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
She would have never been with him.
No. No. She wouldn't. Because he had a cruel streak a mile long.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did it to her son.
Yeah. So, she would never forgive him for how he treated her son.
And I don't... Like, I guess I can see in a warped way where Harry's coming from. That like they had to do what they had to do, but I'm not entirely sure that it couldn't have been accomplished a different way.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, we got way off track. Sorry.
We're going to get out of Harry Potter theory and back into Iron Flame.
Sorry, everybody. My bad.
But I'm not wrong. Lilith is the Snape of Iron Flame.
I'll give you that one.
So they are having this conversation and then Zayden comes in and he and Violet just start sucking face. And this does successfully break the tension between Mira and Brennan because they find it gross and it's awkward.
Yeah, because it is awkward.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is weird. Like, I have no issue with like general PDA. Like, I'll hold hands, I'll kiss my husband. Like, we'll be like very touchy feely. Like, if we're like in a lounge sitting next to each other, like, I'll put my hand on his leg. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm fine with like PDA. Mm-hmm. I am not going to straight up make out with my husband in front of my siblings.
No, And if my siblings did that in front of me, I'd be like, get a fucking room. What is your deal? Like,
gross. Not the place.
Gross. I don't need to see that. They know I love them. Mm. They know I want them to be happy. But
like, I don't need to see it.
Nope.
Don't. And I feel that way about everyone.
Yeah. Everyone. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to go with you on that, too. Like, one, if it was strangers doing that, I'd be like, Jesus Christ. If it was friends, I would probably have the same reaction.
I'd be like,
as my siblings, I'd be like, get a fucking room. What are you doing?
Yeah. Like, the closer in proximity of knowing them, like, the more likely I'm actually going to say something to them.
Yeah. If you're a stranger doing that, I'd be like, oh, okay.
This is like, if I was Mira and Brennan, I would have wished I had like water power so I could like literally hose the two of them down.
That's good. That's good. Like,
oh God. Yeah. So they're fighting, and then Violet's like, guess what? I know how to raise the wards.
Oh, by the way.
No, she doesn't. She's like, I just need like the 7 most powerful writers. And I'm like, how the fuck do you determine that? Arbitrary.
I was like, wait, what?
Where's the mathematical equation? What are the variables for justifying who is the most powerful writer?
I don't know. Like, what's your measuring pole? I guess the dragons decide. How do they decide?
I don't know. So it ends up being 9 people, assembly members, which includes Zayden and Brennan, Bodhi and Violet, who go out to the Wardstone to attempt to raise it. So it's in this like canyon, and she's like, why have I never seen this before? And Zayden responds in her mind with very old, very complicated masking runes. What else has been masked with very old, very complicated masking runes?
Why'd you say it like that?
Because I don't think this is the only thing that's being masked.
Probably not.
What else? What else, Rebecca? What else?
You say that so angrily. Like,
I want to know. What else? When do I get to learn very old, very complicated masking runes?
That's a great question.
When do I get to learn? Sorry, I'm apparently very spicy about literally these 3 chapters.
Clearly.
So, based on Violet's translation of the journal, they need the 8 most powerful writers to put their blood on this onyx black stone thing. So they like, they do the movie thing, which is always the dumbest thing. They cut the fucking palms of their hands. Do you know how dumb that is?
Where, like, would you cut?
I would prick my finger. Use that. Because why would I limit my mobility in my hand by putting a big slice down the middle of it?
I guess the idea is that, okay, my thought process is like, how much blood does it need? Because
no data.
Well, because
remember, Violet has translated like one sentence.
Listen, no, I thought about this here. Too. No, I'm going to tell you, I did think about this. Okay. I have a whole thing.
Okay, please proceed, please.
Okay, because one, like, if it's just a prick, and you only need a little bit of blood, yeah, I'm with you. Like, just prick your fucking finger. I don't get it. But if you need a substantial amount of blood, more than you're going to get from a finger prick, that actually probably would be the best place to do it. Because you can wrap something around it. Because if you do it on your fucking finger, you're not going to be able to grip anything. Why are you looking at me like that?
I wholeheartedly disagree.
Where else would you do it?
Like, if I needed to do something large, I wouldn't, TBH.
I guess if you had to do it on your hand.
If you have a lot of blood, I'm voting no. I'm like, you know what? This is the kind of witchcraft I'm not on board with.
I guess if it had to be your hand, that's where I would do it. But if you could, like, do it anywhere, I guess there's probably other places you could. That it wouldn't, you could get a decent amount of blood. Why are we having this conversation?
You wanted to have this conversation.
I don't know. I started it and then it's like, wait, this isn't where I thought we were going to end up. So.
Regardless.
I did think about it, though. I did. I will say that.
They all cut their hands and they put their hands on this stone and it's described as being cold, almost like it's dead inside. That should have been a fucking clue, Violet. Cold. What's the opposite of cold? What creates life?
Yeah. This.
Anyways, again, I'm going to be annoyed with Violet for like a lot of this book.
Yeah. Again, something we felt like should have been picked up on.
Instantaneously.
Instantly.
Because I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know what it probably means? My thinking is, how did she logically think that this would work? Okay. They know it's like doing wards has something to do with the first six writers. Would you not think that dragons should, like, I don't know, somehow be involved in this process?
Yeah. It didn't make sense to me that they weren't involved. Of course they were involved. Like, I thought, I don't know.
Of course the dragons are fucking involved. Anyway.
Move on.
Anyways, this clearly doesn't work.
Nope.
They all stand there for like a minute looking like idiots, bleeding on this stone, probably getting a staph infection. And nothing happens. And she is very mad at herself. She's like, I don't lose. I don't get things wrong. I'm like, well, bitch, you just did.
You did this time.
You just did. Maybe translate more than a sentence. So then she pitches, well, then we just got to go to Cordon to see Viscount Takaris for the Luminary. And Zayden's like, how many times do I have to use the word no with you, woman?
No. No. No is a whole ass word. No is a word. No is a sentence.
No is a whole ass sentence.
Yep.
You know who's not listening, though? Violet. Yeah. So she refuses to let Brennan mend her hand because she wants the scar to remind her of her failure. And I'm like, this is the most dramatic bullshit I have. Like, this is so annoying to me. Like, I guess that she's like really invested in this, but like, this is your first attempt at doing something that has not been done in like 600 plus years.
Yeah, but she thinks she has to be perfect, I guess. I don't know.
As somebody who does like to be perfect, perfect is unachievable.
Agreed. She
You have ghosties again.
No. It sounds like I have dogs who are fighting over something.
Yeah. This is just so frustrating to me that like she did not come into this thinking, hey, this is really old, this is written in a language that like nobody really knows anymore, this may take a couple tries to figure out and get right.
That should have been,
and she didn't like workshop it with anyone. She didn't talk to Brennan about it, she didn't talk to Zayden about it, like she didn't talk to anybody about this, and nobody was like, this makes no fucking sense.
To be fair, like none of them have the knowledge, though. So really, like, how much feedback could they get?
You know who does know the language?
Who?
Jacenia.
Well, is she there?
She sure as fuck is.
Well, I guess we'll, you know,
see what happens.
Get her involved, maybe.
So Violet is upset, and this makes her powers, like, build inside of her. And she's like shaky, crackly. And one of the assembly members, Felix, we're finally starting to get names of some of these fucking people. One of them is Shuri with Felix. There's like another one. There's Foxface or whatever his name is. I literally could give a shit about these people. I'm going to tell you straight. I do not give one flying fuck about any of these people. Like, I have no reason to care. So Felix comes up to her and he's like, you do not have good control. We're going to start tomorrow. And then Violet proceeds to make just the best decision she has ever made and goes to her sister to ask for help with an asinine, idiotic, stupendously stupid idea.
Which would be?
That is where I'm going to leave you.
Well, I guess we'll have to hear about it next time.
You're going to have to hear about next time. Any final thoughts on this amazing, delightful section?
No, because I think you and I both know that, like, she's just going to continue to irritate the piss out of us, so...
Yeah. She does get better, right? I know I'm rereading it, but she gets better, right?
Little.
She's going to get a more annoying first.
Yeah.
And then she'll... Well, I think she does get eventually a little bit better. But yeah. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you want to check out what is coming up next on the pod, be sure to give us a follow over on Instagram. It's Mel and Jill Geek Out. Or if you have a suggestion of what we should geek out about next, shoot us an email over at jillandmelgeekout@gmail.com. Once again, my name is Melissa.
And I'm Jill.
And this has been Mel and Jill Geek Out. Bye, guys.
Bye.